Analytics is usually talked of in two ways. It's usually talked of in terms of just regular stats on the player's performance on the field, or business analytics, you know, what a customer ends up doing. But this is video analytics, which to me is a lot different, and that's why I have Steve Fall on. Steve, when we're talking video analytics and really the process of how to develop this, this is the whole new game that goes beyond just what they did on the field, but the ratios of which they did it, as well as how their swing works and everything else. This is complicated stuff, but interesting stuff.
Oh, it's very interesting. And, you know, there was a general manager was speaking at a conference, and he said, you know, we've kind of moved beyond home runs and RBI and batting average. Now we're talking about launch angles and velocities and the kind of things that you would hear in a physics classroom, and you still do. But now you're hearing, you know, people in the baseball community and people, you know, with all three, I mean, the NFL, the MLB, NBA, you know, at the highest level, we're seeing video analytics become just huge. And the capabilities are just, are just incredible.
I want to see this go down to the lower levels. I still think that it's going to be quicker at the high school level than at any level, mainly because you'll have parents and booster clubs. They're still the same people that will pay $2 million for a Daktronic scoreboard, and I do think that they'll actually do both because parents are nuts, and parents think that every kid is a star, so they want to prove it by having the most data. Is that kind of where we're going to see it in the next 5 years?
I think we'll definitely see it. I mean, it's, you know, it's a matter of time before it gets down to that level. But, you know, we're seeing that at the NFL level. And yes, if you have a player, a lot of the things that you couldn't quantify before, like, a scout saying, oh, this kid gets a good jump on the ball. Well, now we can say, well, his jump is 0.45 seconds after the batter makes contact with the ball, and he moves at this speed to go and get the ball. I mean, you're talking about data that you can use to compare that prospect to other prospects. So that can get players recruited, that can get them drafted potentially. I mean, there are a number of applications for this kind of data.
Is there a worry that this could become like the jugs gun? This could become that thing where the scouts just hold up and go, oh, he's hitting 96, so therefore he's good, as opposed to hitting 89, which he's not. I mean, there's the famous stories of guys like Greg Maddux, who had really good control, but they weren't throwing the ball as hard, or, you know, Jamie Moyer. I mean, are they going to still get lost in the cracks because now we're just going to go on a data point rather than whether or not they have the skill level at certain other nuances to get batters out or whatever they do?
Well, the key now is you know, back 20 years ago, you just had the velocity of a pitcher to go by, and you could track the location, but the data we have that's available now can determine not only how fast the ball was pitched, but what was the break, what was the movement, when did the movement take place. You know, you talk about late movement on a pitch, like Mariano Rivera's cutter when he was at his best. How much did the ball break? When did it break? All of these things, kind of the things that made the Moyers and the Maddux great, what made them great, you know, as far as location and movement, all of that is now part of the equation. So, yeah, there'll still be players that get lost because maybe they have a skill that's harder to quantify. But now you can just quantify much more than you could before.
So are you saying that pinpoint control is going to become the new sexy, going to become the new speed, high speed that we all talk about, rather than just whether or not you can hit 100 miles an hour on the jugs gun? Because that one always kind of annoyed me, that they'd talk about some guy that went into spring training and threw 105 miles an hour, and it's like, that's great, but if it's straight, I'm sure Mike Trout or Prince Fielder are going to be able to knock that right out of the park without any problem.
Right. Control will always be important. It's going to be the whole package that a pitcher brings. I mean, I don't think, you know, a pitcher like a Bob Tewksbury, who just had unbelievable control but had very low velocity and didn't even have a lot of great break on his pitches, but he was successful because his control was just so good. I don't know if a pitcher like that could be good today. The hitters are just, you know, so strong and can turn around those kind of pitches that he had. But it's going to be everything. It's going to be, do you have the control? Do you have the movement? Do you have the velocity? Do you vary your pitches? I mean, you can take this data. There's people who take this data and say, well, it's better to throw two curveballs than a fastball, or if you throw two fastballs and a curveball, and you can track what the results are. So you can take this data and apply it a number of different ways, but however you do it, there is a possibility of gaining an edge on a competition.
Does this mean, though, that the overhand pitcher is still going to be dominant in how we scout, and we're still going to look at those people that do a submarine ball or throw it kind of funny and say, oh, no, that's not going to work, even because of the break and everything else? Or are we going to stop discriminating against those guys who may have good careers, we just don't like how they throw?
You know, it's going to take time. I mean, there's you know, the things like the size of the pitcher, their build, their arm angle, those are always going to be factors, because we have a track record. We can say this many submariners have done this, have been drafted, and have succeeded at this level to this extent. So, you know, the physical factors are always going to be a consideration. But I think as far as just taking a group of pitchers and saying they can't make it, well, that will happen less often because we'll have hard data to back them up. And, you know, if there's a submarine pitcher who can, you know, get 9 inches of break on his sinker, or his ball drops this much, then that'll be something that it's going to be hard for a scout to ignore.
So do we see this just for baseball, or is this mainly for every sport, to where we're going to actually see it transition to, say, the high school football field, or even the basketball court? I mean, is this really going to go towards everything, or is it really going to be stats-driven towards one sport?
Oh, I think it'll be every sport. Well, in the NBA, for example, you have cameras in every arena that are tracking the position of every player and the ball. They can differentiate between types of shots. They can differentiate. They can quantify defense, which is something that we could never do effectively before. You can say if Roy Hibbert is in the lane, the opposing team shoots 41%. But if it's another center, they shoot 55% at the rim. So he's impacting those close shots at that rate. In the NFL now, you have these tracking devices in 17 stadiums, and they can identify whether a receiver gets open against a defensive back. You know, you can actually quantify something like separation. So think about that. You'd be able to compare receivers and not how many balls they catch, but how well they get separation from the defender. And there's some great possibilities for data like that.
One of the things that came up this week was that John Calipari, the coach of the Kentucky Wildcats, has decided that he's going to have a 2-day combine where scouts can come in, scouts can look at the players, but after that, he's not going to, approve any scouting requests over the season. Does that kind of make it null and void, though, to even do those types of things when you're going to have all this data? The old school way of showing up and sitting there and watching a game and deciding what this person's going to do, is that really going to even be relevant if we've gotten this whole brave new world of every video camera telling you every little data point?
I think teams will still want to go in and do their own scouting, because they're going to be looking for something. They might be looking for something specific. Does this big man, does he defend the post? Does he defend the entry pass? Does he do this? Does he do this? So there will still be value for teams in those scouting sessions. But we're going to be able to do so much more. For one example would be, you can take this technology and say this player shoots this well on catch and shoot opportunities as opposed to when he takes a pull-up jumper on a break. So you'd be able to look at this kind of data. Well, before it was just, pretty much field goal attempts, three-point attempts, that kind of thing. But if you can separate it, you could identify a player like a Steph Curry who is outstanding at a pull-up shot. And that's the kind of thing that's going to be harder to defend at the NBA level. So you're going to have much, much better data to go on by college players, but there still will be some value in those scouting sessions.
But with that, does that actually kind of negate the idea of having, you know, video for some of these teams because they're just going to want to see it with their own human eye? I mean, you saw resistance even to the basic analytics that, you know, came out of Moneyball and all that stuff. I mean, we're still fighting it with some teams that refuse to actually believe that, you know, stats can actually be changed enough to where you can see exactly what the player's performance is, unless it's home runs or batting average. Are we still going to have those people, those old school guys that are going to fight it and not really want video installed or analytics installed in their arena? And this is going to hinder some of this kind of development.
Well, there will always be resistance, but it's going to be difficult to question the hard data. I mean, let's go back to, you know, the defensive example. It used to be all we had to go by in the NBA were things like steals and blocks, and when you're quantifying defense. Well, now you can say if this player is defending the basket, the opposing field goal percentages inside the lane go down by this much. So this is something that, you know, just didn't exist before. And you're going to be able to say, well, before we couldn't really quantify that. We can say this player contributes this much and it results in this many wins. So when you show the hard data, it's going to be very hard for even an old school executive or an old school scout to ignore that.
Has it really been a catch-up of the video to the data? I mean, I got to think that the, you know, 4K kind of screens and shots like that that actually allow you to see every little pixel has allowed some of this data to really come out to where we couldn't have done this 20 years ago with some of the old-school cameras we had.
Well, it's a number of things. I mean, the technology you have now, I mean, we're talking about technology, but the key is from an analytics standpoint is what comes out of the technology. If right now you can get data of every single pitch in a major league game, but that data comes out in a whole long list of X and Y components and arm angles, it's something that's kind of confusing. You need to know how to quantify that. So, and maybe 20 years ago, we didn't even have the computer power to handle this. I mean, the new technology that they have, that they're testing in three stadiums this year in Major League Baseball, produces 20,000 data points per second. So think about there's 60,000 plate appearances in a Major League season, and for every batted ball, you're getting 20,000 data points per second. Every player running the bases. So this is something that you really need to have powerful computing power to make any sense of, and we just didn't have that 10, 20 years ago.
And that's where we're talking about the investment. I still think that one of the problems is not mainly getting the equipment, but also possibly a server farm and really having to go into that because you've got to store that data everywhere. And I mean, look, even with the podcast, I'm almost at 2 terabytes with the amount of stuff, and that's only after 2 years of audio. I can only imagine what it would be for video of every single player of every single thing. Isn't that where some of the problematic stuff, you know, really comes from, is the data storage?
Oh, I'm sure. And you know, that area is not really my expertise, but I'm sure they're finding ways to store it in the cloud or other alternatives because it's just so valuable. Yes, there's a lot of data, but for teams that can make sense of that, you're even seeing it with personnel decisions where teams to mine some of this data that's coming from the PitchFX system, which tracks every pitch. They're hiring physicists who, you know, previously would have gone into academia or would have gone into, you know, go to work for NASA or one of those companies. They're coming to work for baseball teams now because they're the people who have expertise in that kind of data.
With all of this stuff, does this really negate the idea of the umpire? I mean, you know, as we kind of look at all this and go forward, especially into games, has this really hurt the umpires or does this help the umpires? You kind of make data decisions on understanding what a ball and what a strike is.
Well, I believe it helps the umpires. I don't know how the umpires themselves feel about that, but they're, you know, there's opportunities now to say, well, for certain whether that pitch was a ball or a strike. And, you know, it relates to that, where one of the things that's happened in baseball is there's a lot of research now on pitch framing, which is how well the catcher gets a strike call on a pitch out of the strike zone. And experts have found that this is a true skill that some catchers are very good at and other catchers are not very good at. And they're actually contributing to their team's success. So I don't know how an umpire would feel about that, knowing that there are certain catchers that are better at getting a strike. I'm sure the umpires would say, well, that's not true. A ball's a ball and a strike's a strike. But the research shows that there are catchers that are much better at this than others.
I was reading an article about Yadier Molina from the St. Louis Cardinals, who apparently has been able to use his knowledge of, you know, both pitchers and umpires to be able to manipulate strikes or at least, you know, kind of help his team. Has that been something to where now we're going to actually see them really enhance that with this video analytics, to where you're going to know everything about every pitcher and you're going to know everything about every umpire who calls that stuff? It's really going to be a game of understanding how much homework you do if you're a catcher to be able to call a game and really understand who you're going up against.
That's definitely true. And it's interesting that you brought up Molina, because he is very, very good at this. And his brother, Jose Molina, is considered the best catcher at it. There's been estimates that he saves a team as many as 25 runs in a season, which is a huge difference. That can translate to 4 wins or so. So think about, you know, if your team finishes 88 wins, if he could contribute 4 more wins, you're talking about going from possibly a wild card to a division winner, or maybe, you know, a team that doesn't even make the playoffs to making the playoffs. So there are players that are so good at this. And what's interesting is you haven't seen where their contracts reflect this skill. Catchers are still basically evaluated for how often they play and how well they hit. Well, Jose Molina is not a very good hitter, so you haven't seen a big impact on his contract. But I believe in the next couple of years, you will see teams starting to pay for this kind of value.
But that was one of the things and arguments that was in Moneyball, was that defense didn't matter as much as offense or production. I mean, is this where the video analytics actually kind of support that? No, you know, defense matters just as much as offense when it comes to these things. And possibly, as you're saying, Jose Molina or somebody else actually becomes an unsung hero, because everyone still looks at how many times he gets on base or how many times he does this, whereas being a defensive star might actually be saving the teams just as many runs and having just as many wins as somebody who does all those other analytical points that everyone else seems to like, since, you know, they found, you know, weighted batting average and everything else.
People have always known that the defense is very important. The problem is that it was so hard to quantify. I mean, I mentioned the basketball example, and in baseball, in many ways, it was even harder. I mean, going back 20 years ago, people just evaluated defense by error totals and then came up with range factor, which showed how many plays a player made per 9 innings. And that's a much better tool, but it still doesn't tell the whole story. Now, with the new technology, we can quantify this. We can say he saves this many runs. This many runs translates to 3 wins that this player is adding to our team. But still, even though we can quantify it much better, we're not nearly as good at quantifying defense as offense, which is probably one reason why we haven't really seen it enter a contract into major league contracts or NBA contracts at this stage.
So this is the brave new world of measuring defense as much as offense. Well, great stuff, Steve Vall. Hope to have you on the podcast next week, and let's chat again. But great stuff with the analytics and video.